This is Entrepreneur Radio. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
You know what, Entrepreneur? We are dedicated to inspiring you, the leaders of today and tomorrow, with real-life stories and the trials and tribulations and triumphs of entrepreneurs that have achieved their dreams. And that's what this show is all about, is learning from those who have been there before us. For me, that guy right now is Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief. He was here before me. He is the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur. And learning how right now to do a little time management. Man, that is one of the biggest things in my life. How about you, Jason?
I have such a hard time with time management. I mean, you know, it's funny because people, every time I debut some new thing that I did, you know, a new podcast that I launch, a new project, my friends always, they say the same thing, right? Which is, when do you sleep? You know, how many times do you hear that? When do you sleep? But I'll tell you, the thing that I have trouble with is not actually finding time to do the things that I want to do because I'm willing to work overtime or get up early, all that stuff. The challenge that I have is that I don't know, I can't stop things during the day so I can move on to the next one. I will set up all sorts of appointments, and then one appointment will go long because either I lost track of time or I feel bad ending a conversation if somebody came and met me, and then the rest of the day gets screwed up and things are just crashing into each other. And so the thing that has been most challenging for me and that I really suggest entrepreneurs need to think about is, one, being comfortable saying no, or this is over, I need to stop, I need to move on. Like being really mindful of your calendar.
Right.
And then number two is just not overstuffing your day. I try to do too much.
Yeah, right,
know? Right. You?
Yeah. You know what's funny is last night at 7:30, I'm on the West Coast, I texted a friend of mine that's a business associate, and it wasn't, hey, let's talk about such a, it's you up? Because it was like 10:30 at night. I had no business sitting. He says, yeah, I'm just going to bed. Can we talk tomorrow? I go, okay. And I was kind of a little disappointed. It's like my day doesn't want to end. And so I have to learn how to pull back on the reins and say, whoa, you know, let that day end. And I'm constantly having this issue with my wife and my kids. And they're like, Dad, put it down, that evil thing in your hand, you know?
Done. So, yeah. Try to move on to the next thing.
It's a big one.
You know what I've found is has been really helpful for me? People will ask to meet me. Like they'll ask to come in and have an in-person meeting. And I say, no, I can only do it by phone because that's how I stay on track.
Right.
Which is, I know it's like a simple, small thing, but for me, it's actually been really valuable because once you get to know your own habits and your own faults, I realize that when somebody comes into my office, they come to meet me personally, I feel bad booting them out at the time that I got to move. So if I scheduled half an hour for this, it'll go 45 minutes. I just know it. But if I'm on the phone, I don't feel that same pressure.
Isn't that interesting?
I can say, okay, you know what? It's been half an hour. I got to go.
Interesting. Well, you know, I have a friend, Scott Duffy. I just saw him do a Facebook Live.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And this guy is Quick Draw McGraw. When it's time to go, he goes, hey, I got to jump. And I go, okay. He goes, bike. It's like, how did he do it so fast?
Like Jack Bauer.
Yeah,
do you remember Jack Bauer on 24 would always like hang up the phone like mid-sentence? It was amazing.
My dad does that. It's like, wait a minute. You didn't even finish saying goodbye. But you know what? Some people are good at it. They know they got to go. They keep moving and they're on. But I tend to be a little bit of a long talker sometimes. But that's why I'm a radio guy. It works.
Yeah, no, it's perfect for you. It's perfect for you. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just, I think that what you need to do is if you respect your time, other people will respect your time too, right? Like you don't hate on someone who's like, okay, I gotta go, right? Because you know that they're on track. Like they're not blowing you off. They gotta go.
Right. No,
they
true
got
story.
Something to do.
Speaking of that, I gotta pay some bills. I gotta go. Hold still.
Oh, here we go. Let's do it.
All right, you're listening to Entrepreneur Radio. Check out Entrepreneur Magazine on newsstands everywhere and entrepreneur.com on the web. Videos, great stories, lots of podcasts. And on the other side of this break, we'll talk more with Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Radio after these messages.
Well, this is Entrepreneur Radio, just like Entrepreneur Magazine, on newsstands everywhere. On the cover, Young Millionaires. And Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief, here to talk about The power of a youthful perspective in entrepreneurship, which is important. Very important.
Sure is.
Us old guys like me, I know you're not as old as me, but man, you know, we've been there. We've done that. We're kind of like a scar, battle scars. Don't want to really take too many risks anymore. You know, so having somebody young that's kind of, you know, fearless when they're young like that, it's a wonderful thing.
I think the hardest thing, the biggest problem that guys your age,
is that
they are more likely to say, oh, well, we do this because that's how it's always been done.
Right.
You know, they've been in an industry for so long that they just absorbed the modes of thinking and they stopped looking outside of that box. And over again, I heard that as we were reporting this issue that's out on stands now, it's full of stories of young entrepreneurs doing awesome things. And I kept hearing that, you know, the greatest asset that a young person has is their inexperience, because they're willing to look at problems in completely new ways. They're not boxed in to the ways that that people who have been in an industry forever are boxed into. They're looking fresh. And very importantly, Alan, and this I think is something that young people do inherently. It's just part of them, but that everybody, no matter your age, can do as well and should do. They're willing to ask dumb, simple questions.
Yeah,
they're willing to walk up and say, "Hey, why is this done this way? What's going on exactly? Have you tried this other thing?" Right? Because they're not afraid of that because they are young and nobody expects them to know everything, and so they're not afraid. But I will tell you, just asking basic questions, just looking at things from fresh perspectives, going up to people and saying, "Hey, why do you do this the way that you do that?" is so important and leads to so much insight and innovation that everybody should be doing that. That is not just the domain of the young.
You know what's sad about that, because it's sad because it's true, is that if you question and the person goes, "Well, that's just how we've always done it," then you know you've got some big problems because they don't even know why they're doing it. Matter of fact, on the cover, it says, "A new breed of CEOs are raising millions, selling millions, and questioning everything." And this starts on page 35, September issue. It's interesting. I had a couple of young guys in your social media, brilliant young guys. And I said, "You know what your biggest problem is?" And they looked at me and they're like, "What?" And I said, "You guys are both 21 years old." And they kind of were, and I could tell they were starting to get pissed at me. And I go, "But you know what your biggest asset is? You're both 21 years old." And then I basically told them what you just said. I said, "My problem is I'm 57. I'm afraid of, you know, I know too much. You know what I mean? I know how Sally will feel if something happens. If I do this, it's going to affect her that way. I know too much. I have too much history. And sometimes you just need to crash through and break through the glass ceiling and just make new stuff happen." You know?
Yeah, that's right. So that's right. You know, so the cover story of the September issue is about Emily Weiss, who built this awesome beauty company called Glossier. And the stuff that she's doing with that company, which is huge, it has an insane cult following. I mean, I have heard so many people who saw her on the cover of this magazine and were like personally moved because they just feel such a connection to this company. But a big, big thing, the big asset that she brought to this was that she was willing to think about beauty and the beauty industry in a way that all of her giant competitors don't or won't, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, down to things like the price point, right? I mean, she sells things at a lower price point because she knows that today's young consumer, you don't need to play this stupid game that the fashion industry plays where, like, things are really expensive just to communicate their value, right? You don't need to play that game anymore. That doesn't work with today's audience. And she does R&D. She's developing new products by talking to her fans on Instagram, by polling them, and then, very, very key, she's built technology that monitors how her products are portrayed on Instagram. So she sees how people are talking about them, how they're showing them, and then you can learn lots of stuff about your customer that you can build into the next products. Now, that's just something that older folks are not thinking about, but Emily came up using Instagram, right? Like, she's an Instagram native. She's young enough. So she sees the connection. She sees connections that her competitors don't, and that is such a strong advantage.
Yeah. I tend to have a lot of young people working for me, and I laugh at their intuitive nature, because since they don't know, and then they will question everything, And, you know, like, who made those rules? And I'm like, I don't know. That's those are just the rules. That's the rules of the game. Well, then, you know, I mean, is it okay to break the rules? I mean, if you don't even know who made the rules sometimes and they don't make any sense anymore, you know, I own my own company. I'm an entrepreneur. I can break the rules. It's my company. I can do whatever I want to do. That's the beauty of being an entrepreneur. You can decide what you want to do in your life, how you want to do it, even if it's different.
That's right. And I think that, you know, you said when you find that thing where somebody says, you know, we've done this because this is the way it's always been done. You know, you found a problem. You also found an opportunity because everybody can do that in their own business, in their own lives. Why am I doing it this way? Yeah. What's going on? And if the reason is just because institutionally that's what's always happened, well, then I guarantee you there's a better way to do it. There's a more innovative way to do it. You should question everything.
Well, you know what's funny is I stopped asking questions after a while because I thought to myself, you know, I don't really want to know how they do it. I think I see a clear path to doing this, whatever this is. And I followed that. And you know what? It's worked for me, and I'm glad I didn't do it the other way because that's what made me stand out. Let's take another break. Talking with the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, Jason Pfeiffer. This is Entrepreneur Radio.
Listening to Entrepreneur Radio. Here's Alan Taylor.
And our editor-in-chief, Jason Pfeiffer, and our hearts and prayers go out to those affected by these floods and hurricanes and fires. This last week has been just an absolute historic week with this kind of stuff. So hope you guys are all being safe out there. Jason, yeah, it's crazy stuff going on, right?
Yeah. You know what? I'm from South Florida. I grew up in Coral Springs, Florida. And, so I'm certainly, you know, thinking a lot about my friends and family who were down there, this weekend. We should tell our listeners that we're recording this on Thursday. So, this is going to be airing over the weekend. We don't exactly know what's going to happen yet. But, you know, Alan, I thought that it would be really good for us to talk about this one bit of business news because I think there's that ties in. The hurricane, and also is, I think, just a really good lesson for entrepreneurs, which is, did you see that news that JetBlue is capping direct flights out of Florida at $99?
Yeah, I saw it on Facebook, and you know what? I felt like, right on, JetBlue, you know?
Yeah, that's how I felt, too. So smart. You know, it's like, it's a good service for people. JetBlue doesn't need to go, jacking up the price for people who are desperate to leave for safety reasons.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, this is just good corporate citizenship.
Yep.
And I saw that news. I thought, good for you, JetBlue. And then a guy named Pat Kiernan, who's an anchor at New York One, which is a television station here in New York, had tweeted out, people remember corporate gestures like this for a long time. Well done, JetBlue. And I said, yeah, that's exactly right. And I retweeted it. And then, Alan, the craziest thing, and this is what I want to talk about, a whole bunch of people responded to me, and they said, like, here's one. There's a person who said, well, these are just seats on planes that were already leaving Florida. And, you know, another person said, well, JetBlue has every incentive to get its plane out of the storm's way. And you know, it was a good move by JetBlue, and that people looked at it so cynically, I thought said something about the importance of a consistent message.
Yeah.
You know, because these people, you know why they're reacting that way? I think they're reacting that way because they've heard so many bad things from the airline industry. They've been upset by airlines in the past, not necessarily even by JetBlue, but they're just looking at it cynically.
Right.
And so even a good gesture like this, people, they're going to be like, ah, well, what's the angle? You know?
Yeah.
And that is a lesson for all entrepreneurs that you can't just do a good thing once. You can't just, reach out to your customers and surprise and delight them once. It has to be consistent. You're building goodwill consistently. And of course, yeah, it's really hard if you work in the airline industry, but you know, like, let's just think about you're running a restaurant, right? Like, you want to be constantly delighting people, constantly connecting with them. And that means that every little gesture that you make is just going to contribute to that love. Instead of what you're seeing now with the airline industry, where even when they do something nice, people are like, well, I don't know.
Right, yeah. Well, you know what? And there's always going to be those, you know, glasses half empty, you know, negative people in the world that are always going to say things like that. But you said it right there. And I saw a book with this name one time as I was, you know, walking through the airport. It said Driven to Delight. And I didn't even buy the book. I said, that is exactly, in a few words, what you should do for your customers is drive them to delight. Not just be happy, but they are delighted with your service. And that is something that is so forgotten. And I think that when we experience that, man, if there's anything in the world that is viral, it is the people that have been driven to delight. They will tell their friends will tell their friends, they will come back over and over again. But it is something that has to be in you, and you have to really make it, you know, a part of your business and your life in general. Not easy thing to do, something you really have to search hard for. And I think that's what this show, this magazine, this media company is all about, is finding these examples of companies that have driven their customers to delight and sharing that so you can see how it can be done. And in our case, this little thing with JetBlue, I was like, right on. That's, of course, now that makes me go in their direction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right on. There is no guidebook. There's no way to say, here are the three ways to delight your customers, right? It's about thinking creatively, and it's about understanding their needs. And I love telling those kinds of stories in the magazine, because when you see how other people are doing it, you're inspired to think about how you can do it too. And, you know, it's very simple. You know, delighting a customer, it doesn't take much. A recent thing that I was so delighted to hear was a friend was at a hotel. It was the Four Seasons, so you know, hey, they've got it figured out.
Customer service.
Yeah, they got it figured out. But like, listen to what they're doing, because this is simple and this is something any hotel could do. He had shown up with a bottle of mouthwash that he had traveled with, and then he finished it off. The first day, he tossed it into the trash, and when he got back to his hotel room that night, they saw that he'd thrown out a bottle of mouthwash, and they got him a new one, and it was sitting there waiting for him.
That's right? See, now that is brilliant, right?
So brilliant, right? Wow. Like, what did that cost Four Seasons? $2, right. And they just earned a customer for life on that.
Yeah,
it's
no,
so
totally.
Smart.
I gotta say, when somebody does it right, there's nothing wrong on the planet. Nothing wrong with copying that and going, you know what? That's smart. I'm doing it. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so, copy away.
That's
copy
right.
Away, because that little thing, seeing what a customer, you know, what a customer found useful, and then going out and getting it for them, you can do that in a million different ways, right? You can copy the Four Seasons on that in any industry, in any way. It's not going to feel like copying. It's going to feel completely fresh and new to the customer that you just delighted.
That's it. I have to consider myself the biggest copycat in the world, then, because when I see something that I like that somebody else did, man, I want to make that a part of me in the fastest way I can. And at first, it may feel a little fake, may feel like I copied it, but after a while, when I've actually become that gracious person, then I go, okay, this is cool. Jason Pfeiffer, thank you so much.
Hey, always a pleasure.
That is our editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Copy away. We'll be right back with some more.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Radio after these messages. Entrepreneur Radio. Here's Alan Taylor.
Well, right about now, America is looking at what's going on, whether it be the fires that are burning on the West Coast, the hurricane that is blowing and doing its damage in Florida, or the floods over in Houston, in that area. There's a lot of stuff going on. And all the time, we got that idiot over there in North Korea practicing dropping bombs and stuff, right? So let's take a moment to pay attention to what's going on with military and military families. And the reason why is because Mike Schindler's on the line, U.S. Navy veteran, author, founder, CEO of Operation Military Family Cares. He is also author of a book, U.S. Veterans in the Workforce, Why the 7% are America's greatest asset. Mike, I understand, too, through talking to you briefly in the commercial break, you are directly somehow related to the Schindler from Schindler's List, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, so I'm told. I mean, I'm told that, you know, that's family connection right there.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, second cousin, I believe, to my grandfather. So I can't stake claim to the name saying that, you know, we've carried that tradition on. But tremendous work that Oscar Schindler did, no
question. You know, I tell you right now that the average American, the average person in the world never really thinks too much about putting their life on the line until recently. Recently, somehow, like, remember the movie, the cartoon, I should say, The Grinch That Stole Christmas? And at the end, when he realized the little girl, when he was about to push all of the presents that he had stolen over the top of the Matterhorn and the top of the mountain, whatever it was, and he saw the little girl's face, and he realized that she was going to go over with all the stuff, and his heart grew 10 times bigger in that moment. And he pulled the whole sleigh back up the side of the hill so it wouldn't get lost and the little girl wouldn't get killed. That's what's happening in America right now. People are helping each other for no reason other than that it's the right thing to do. We're showing the best of who we are as Americans, as human beings, actually. Not just Americans, but human beings. We care about each other. That is what God put in us. Something called care. So I see here Operation Military Family Cares. And by the way, everybody, check them out. OMF, which stands for Operation Military Family, and the word cares.org. OMFcares.org. I appreciate what you're doing, and that's why I wanted to find out how can we help you? How can we spread the word? Again, you are, you know, thank you for your service, U.S. Navy veteran. And so tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was actually born, you know, back in 2006 is when it first started. My best buddy, who's a colonel now, we were sitting around the Thanksgiving table, and he said, hey, you know, tomorrow I leave for Afghanistan. And I went, what? Now, this is in the time when I was still chasing shareholder value, you know, in the corporate sector, somewhat feeling like, man, I need to be involved, but I'm not. I'm kind of benched, right? You know, I'm no longer in the service, but he's still in. And so I chose to write a keepsake is how it started, Alan. And that was the first book, Operation Military Family, how military couples are fighting to preserve their marriages. And that is what kind of put us on the map, is we want to find out how were couples maintaining their relations through this op tempo of multiple deployments, stop loss, et cetera. And that moved to us really understanding that there was such a need to not only better serve our military and veteran families, because every day, to your words, they are on the front lines, only 1% of the population. You think about that, right? Of this great nation, and we're proving it here in Houston, you know, politics aside, everybody's working together. It doesn't matter. They're all working together for a common mission. That's what we do day in, day out in the military. 1% of the population, day in, day out, is focused on specific missions to keep this country strong, protected, and great. And I realized, boy, there's so much more that needs to be done here, not only about better serving, but how do we leverage that talent in our communities? Because you think about it, across America, we have veterans that are living, breathing, contributing, but hidden.
Yeah.
It's a hidden gem in every community across America. So how do you leverage that talent so that you can continue to make these communities thrive? And that's really what our organization started doing. And that's why I tapped into the Institute for Veterans and Military Families, national organization. And that's what we do throughout the country.
What do you think the general population thinks about most veterans? I'm just curious, being one yourself.
Well, the data is easy. I can answer that. It's very simple. I mean, when you say and test yourself on this, Alan, when you go out into your community, you say, just ask people, what are the first three things you think about when I say the word veteran? And just do your own case study. But what the research shows is that when you peel back the canned answers, and you get to the meat and potatoes, when you start talking to hiring managers, the first three things that typically pop up are PTSD, homelessness, and suicide.
Mm. Boy, you know what? And it's sad. My dad's a veteran. I have a sister-in-law that's a veteran. And she's got PTSD, admittedly. And then I have a kind of an adopted son that I, you know, I was telling you in the commercial break that is about to be a veteran, and not because he doesn't want to still be in the military, but, you know, he has an allergic reaction to ants. I think I told him, everybody, during the commercial break, my adopted kid, I call him that because he just started living with us when he's 13. He was on one of these amazing outings that they take as a ranger, and he fell asleep. He was so tired after 4 days of not sleeping that he was getting bit by all these ants, and he had an allergic reaction. They had to mercy flight him out, and now he's getting a military discharge because, you know, he's so allergic to it. But I have military in my family. And so I have to agree that, you know, yes, my sister-in-law, she's been battling with this. And my father, who helped to start PatriotOutreach.org, which helps families with PTSD. So I agree. That's what we think. And it's wrong. How do we change that perception, Mike?
Well, that's why we started doing this whole campaign is really, we need to change that conversation. You know, for me, it stemmed when I went to a memorial service, and one of the guys there was a Korean War veteran, looked at me, and he said, "Mike, why are all our guys coming back broken?" And it just hit me, and I went, they're not. But, you know, my friends at Wounded Warrior Project, which they do a tremendous job, they do tremendous work, despite what media says, they are on front lines too. But we had this conversation. I went, we need to stop showcasing the challenge. What we need to showcase is the victory, right? We all have challenges. When you look at PTSD, the number one cause of PTSD is not combat. The number one cause is car accidents. So who do you think suffers more car accidents? Mm. Those of us in the military or those of us in the civilian sector?
Right.
So we don't talk about that, right? We think PTSD veterans. That's not true. There's a percentage, no question. But the greater percentage of the population that serves this country has skills and ability, talent. And let's talk about two things that companies love and people love.
All right, hold it. I'm going to talk about that on the other side because I got to take a break. People love character and aptitude. And I think that is so important. So we're going to find out, you know, what employers should know about hiring a vet. With Mike Schindler. He is, again, U.S. Navy veteran. I think you guys should check it out. Operation Military Family Cares, OMFCares.org. This is Entrepreneur Radio. You're listening to Entrepreneur Radio. I'm Alan Taylor. And I believe that what Mike Schindler said is absolutely true. If you're just joining us, he said that, you know, the one thing that people love about those that are veterans and in the military is character and aptitude. So I apologize for cutting you off, Mike. I think that let's jump right back in right there. Character and aptitude, you said.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think as employers, we look at, you know, we got a higher skill set. But in the military, we're trained that the only thing standing between who I am today and who I want to be is training. So when we get into the civilian sector, suddenly people are like, "Hey, listen, have you been trained up on that yet?" Well, no, but I'm going to bring you something that I'm sure value, which is character and aptitude. And people kind of look at you weird and say, "Well, I'm not sure that's really important," until you hire somebody that doesn't have it.
Right.
And suddenly you're like, this is a mess. Guy's got skills, but no character. You know, it's not a quick, not quick on his feet or her feet. And that's the one thing that the military trains up really well is we shape character. Okay. We shape character. It's like constant parenting in many ways. Those of us that have been parents, you know, we're always shaping our kids. When we do that in the military, we shape warriors. We shape character. We define it, we shape it, and we encourage it and we build upon it. And aptitude is that ability to just be quick on our feet, right? You know, mission fails, not an option. So we have to have the aptitude to think outside the box, whereas sometimes people think that we're pretty rigid. You know, we get that a lot. Really rigid. No, focused. Okay, yeah. That's the better word for this. As we're extremely focused on mission success. So in the corporate sector, when people hire veterans, what the studies show is in a period of 2 years, if you've aligned mission and purpose between the employer and the veteran that you hire, if you've aligned that mission and purpose, in 2 years, that person will outperform and excel beyond their civilian counterpoint because they bring something outside of character and aptitude. Is the aptitude piece of that begins to show. And they go, you know what? I'm thinking outside the box. I know how to make this mission more successful. And they're not a liability for the company. And that's the thing that we're working to really change that perception in America is absolutely some need services. Some do need that. But how do we in America start to leverage this talent that is hiding in our communities? And that's our goal, is to reshape that conversation and help communities thrive.
Now, Operation Military Family Cares is a veteran services and consulting 501c3 not-for-profit, focuses on providing pathways to success for our military and veteran families, as well as improving on Department of Defense transition processes. So the question is, how do entrepreneurs, businesses, how do we find these people? I mean, that's what I want to know, because I would in a heartbeat hire a veteran in a heartbeat, but they're not knocking on my door, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, part of it is the companies that are doing this really well. Like I'm going to take one here in our own backyard because everybody's pretty familiar with it, Starbucks. You know, 10 years ago, Starbucks had no campaign to speak of for our military and veteran families. None whatsoever. As a matter of fact, Mr. Schultz, Howard, was like, we're not going to get involved in this piece. And then, you know, he had that association with Robert Gates, former, you know, defense secretary, and all of a sudden that started changing. And they started really making it a focus and a highlight. And what they found is that companies that begin to focus and understand the talent of veterans. Veterans is a small community. The 7% that I talk about, those are the living, breathing people in America today that are still alive that have served this country. It's a small population. We begin to talk. It's an internal network. It's a brotherhood, sisterhood. And when companies or small businesses or entrepreneurs start to say, you know, I'm targeting veterans. I want to hire veterans because of these reasons. I'm looking for people that are disciplined. I'm looking for people that have character. I'm looking for people that I can train up, but that I can depend on.
Right.
When you start to feature that, right, all of a sudden that becomes a magnet for those of us that have served because you're speaking our language.
Right.
But if you go to market that says, you know, I'm looking for a data processor, okay, right, I'm no different than anybody else, and chances are I'm already thinking in my own mind that they're going to hire somebody that already has this experience. Because I don't necessarily probably have the corporate experience they're looking for,
right,
because the military does things different than corporate.
Right? Now, let me ask you, though. Is omfcares.org a good place for people to go? As I'm running out of time.
It's a great place for people to go, yeah.
Right.
Great place for people to reach out, get started with us. We'll get you plugged into the Institute for Veterans and Military Families, too, and some of the things that we're doing on a national level.
Okay.
Yeah, but great place for people to reach out.
omfcares.org. Keep up the good work, Mike, and thank you for your service and what you're doing for these military families and our veterans. Appreciate it.
You betcha. Thanks, Alan.
I just want to shine a light on this. I think it's a very, very important topic, and I am happy, happy to hire a veteran. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Radio after these messages. Entrepreneur Radio. Here's Alan Taylor.
Well, I hope you're enjoying our show. Each week we do this segment with my friend Chase Jarvis, where we answer your questions. You can call in and have your questions answered at 802-962-4357. Again, that's 802-962-4357. Chase does something called Creative Live. You might want to check that out. Creative Live. He is the co-founder, and it's the world's leading online education platform for creatives and entrepreneurs like you and I. You can find Chase in everything he does, along with over 10,000 hours of this amazing content to help you become a better person and entrepreneur at creativelive.com. All right, the question today comes from Jessica, and this is one I've never heard before. She wants to know how Chase and many entrepreneurs in the beginning deal with something called imposter syndrome. This is the feeling that you aren't qualified to do your job. Chase?
I love this question. Thank you very much for asking it. I don't know a single one of my friends that hasn't dealt with this in some way, shape, or form. And even today, many of the most successful people that I know dip in and out of this. And if you don't know, I guess first thing is first to define what imposter syndrome is. Imposter syndrome is the idea that you've done a lot of the work, but you somehow don't deserve to be where you are. You've actually earned yourself the right to be there, but for some reason you don't feel like you've earned it. You've tricked the system, or you're, oh my God, how did I just end up here? And so first and foremost, you're worth it. You're good enough right now to do anything you want to do in your life. You might not be able to play professional basketball, for example, but you are good enough to start the journey towards becoming a professional. You don't need any permission from anyone, okay? You're good enough today. Start whatever you want to do, and whatever you want to be or become in life, start it today. It's the most important thing. No one's going to give you some title. You have to take the title. I am a photographer. I am a designer. I am an entrepreneur. And it's best backed up by the actions and the activities in the life that lead that. But you have to claim it. Actually, I'm going to, what's that blog post? This is going to be worth it. Hang on 1 second here. So, all right. This is worth it. This is worth me typing. Okay, it's on Creative Life blog, Own Your Title, Why It's Time to Call Yourself an Artist. It's been shared 4,400 times. First of all, I want you to go check that out, okay? Own Your Title, Why It's Time to Call Yourself an Artist. So again, you can give yourself your title. You have to take it and own it, okay? Second of all, one day it just goes away and you never have it again. It comes and goes as your career grows and ebbs and flows. It will come back and it will come back to haunt you. So creating a narrative in your mind that will help you turn that off, and that is, I'm good enough. I'm doing the best that I can. There are so many checks and balances, not to mention this is just how literally the universe works. You can't actually get somewhere you weren't supposed to be. Just think about that for a second. Next time someone cuts you off in traffic, they were actually supposed to be there because that's what happened in the universe. So if you're standing on stage about to go out and give your TED talk or about to receive a prize for $100,000, you were supposed to be there. The universe has conspired to put you there. Now, the better that you can align with the things that you want to be and start to use that as to your advantage and visualize, I talk a lot about that, it's going to be better for you. But I want you to know that imposter syndrome, it comes and goes. And the best thing you can do is to create some strategies about understanding that your self-worth is not the number of people that like your Facebook post or that hire you to record their next album. That isn't a measure of your self-worth. It is a reflection of how you're doing in business, but there's a difference between those two things. If you're in doubt, keep making. That's the best way to work through this. Keep making and sharing. Push through these challenges by doing the thing that you were put on this earth to do, which is to make stuff, assuming that you've decided that you want to do the work to become the thing and live the life that you want to live. So that's a fantastic question. Thank you for asking it. Long answer, but it's an important one. There's some resources there. Make it till you make it. And please send me your question. Call it in at 802-962-4357. That's 802-962-HELP. If you're international, put a 1. And I'm super psyched. All right, that's it for this episode.
Thank you, Chase. Once again, that phone number is 802-962-4357. And you can find Chase Jarvis and everything he does and everything he's about at creativelive.com. I'm Alan Taylor. This is Entrepreneur Radio, just like Entrepreneur Magazine on newsstands everywhere. Take the time to check out, when you get in front of your computer, entrepreneur.com. Lots of great videos, lots of podcasts like this, and more of this show, entrepreneur.com. I'm Alan Taylor for Entrepreneur Radio. We'll see you next week, same time, same channel. See you then.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.